Welcome to Books and Beyond with your hosts, Karen and Louisa. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah, standing there.
Kia ora, everyone. Kia ora, Louisa. So coming up is the Publishers Association of New Zealand, PANZ, Book Design Awards. They recognise 8 categories of book designs, including Young Designer of the Year, Best Cookbook, and of course Best Cover. So all the best to those who are in the running for awards. Let it be known, this is for on behalf of Karen and I, that we really appreciate the efforts graphic designers, illustrators and artists.
And publishers.
And publishers, of course, who make those big decisions. Do all the work you do to make books so appealing to read and visually memorable to us. Is that right, Karen?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So it got Karen and I thinking about that special relationship between design and art, the art world and the book world.
So basically, the way we always go beyond, we've gone beyond and we've actually been thinking about books that have in any way, shape or form a link to art and the art world.
That's right. That's what I was trying to say. So thank you, Karen. Yes. So before, I know you've got some really cool, as you always do, Karen, find some cool, interesting books that no one else seems to find to discuss today. But I want to say I am so pleased to see a local children's picture book by local artist Flox and also Michael Clark on that shortlist
for an award. PANZ Award.
Tumekitui, I think, is one of the most striking books you can ever see in a library. I can never resist picking it up and turning the pages, even though I might be supposed to be doing something else, and admiring the visual feast of her boldly coloured birds and nature. It's really a work of art.
Did we say it was a picture book? I'm not sure, but it's up for Picture Book Award, yeah.
Yep, it's up for the children's, it's in the children's book category.
Yeah, yeah.
It is also
and Auckland Library's top 100.
Oh, that's why she knows it so well.
I do.
And it also comes in Te Reo Māori and English. So it's a book that we love. But I think what I was thinking in relation to the show today is that people might be excused to think that the images are produced digitally or things like that. But no, Hayley, the artist known as Flox, actually hand paints everything using stencils and aerosol cans. So I'm looking forward to more collaborations between Flox and authors, please, that you really do brighten up our libraries. So thank you so much. So there you go, Karen. What treasure? Well, what have you found?
They're all treasures. We also have a treasure from the basement coming up. This one is a treasure from the recent another Auckland Library's top 100 list. I've brought the book I'm reading now. It just happened to fit in perfectly with our theme. So I'm reading The Lonely City, Adventures in the Art of Being Alone by Olivia Lang. And this was a huge success and widely read, and I was one of the few people who didn't read it because I thought it was Wandering the City of New York, and I just read Vivian Gornick's book about Wandering the City of New York. But it's actually, the subtitle here, Adventures in the Art of Being Alone, is actually tied in with art and the art world in New York. So she wanders. It is about being lonely, and it's dedicated to everyone who's been lonely or is lonely, but it's she explores the neighborhoods of New York and muses on the various chapters of art history that have been lived in those neighborhoods that she's walking through. And I've got a surprise for you. Andy Warhol. Donald Warhol. Is it that book that you found, the huge book Donald Warhol. Warhola. He didn't change his name. A book that Louisa wanted to bring along today and it was too big and too heavy. And
it
I
was.
Said, no, don't bring it. But then last night as I was reading Falling Asleep, I came across Donald Warhola in this book, in The Lonely City. So it's in this wonderful section where she talks about Andy Warhol's time capsules. So Andy Warhol was a hoarder. I don't know how many people know that. So tied to his obsession with shopping was this obsession of keeping objects. And she uses the term a ballast of objects. And she says that it's sort of a way that you can counterweight to the mounting fear of abandonment that he had. And he created is the largest and most extensive artwork he made, the Time Capsule, 610 sealed brown cardboard boxes. So the last 13 years of his life, he filled these boxes with postcards, letters, newspapers, magazines, photographs, invoices, slices of pizza, a piece of chocolate cake, and even a mummified human foot. Andy Warhol. So she has this wonderful part where she meets up. She gets the curator who's keeping these boxes to open them and allow her to see the time capsules. And she has a really wonderful part where she meets Andy's nephew, Donald. So I think Donald, doesn't he go by Warhola, didn't we say? Oh, you do have the book with you.
No,
it's another
book.
So Donald, she says, Andy...
I was just thinking about, you know, when you talk about... collections and sizes. I was just checking the size of a painting.
Oh, right. So it did look a little black and white and sepia there for Andy. So anyway, so here, Louisa, this is my reading now. You ready? Because this is a book that has to have a reading to let you understand.
You're reading it just for me, really.
I'm reading it just for you because it's about Donald Warhol. So it says, Andy's nephew Donald was giving a talk at the museum while I was there, as he did most weeks. One afternoon, we sat down in the cafe together, and he told me about his uncle, speaking slowly and distinctly into my little silver tape recorder. What he remembered most was Andy's kindness, how he liked to joke around with the kids, as his two beloved dachshunds, Amos and Archie, ran barking. I'm thinking of the boxes, then barking around the room. His apartment had been crammed from top to bottom with fascinating objects, and Donald remembered thinking even then that it was a microcosm of New York, the city that seemed so thrilling to him as a child. And this is the ending of this chapter. I just love it. I asked him then if he thought that Warhol was happy, and he said that Andy was at his happiest in his studio, a place that Donald described as his playland, adding that he thought Andy had sacrificed a great deal to become an artist, including the possibility of having a family of his own. Later, after I turned off the machine and we were walking out of the cafe, we began to chat about the capsules, and he said musingly, maybe they were a partner to him. Maybe they were, or at least a way of occupying the space a partner would have inhabited. Or maybe it was just reassuring to know that whatever happened, whoever vanished next, he had all the evidence in order, boxed and ready for the case against death.
Aww.
Isn't that great? That's Olivia Lang. Yeah. So over to you.
Oh, thank you. Well, that was very touching. Thank you. And I'm sorry I interrupted with sorting out my books on the pile of books over here.
That's all right.
Because...
just didn't look like Andy Warhol.
I have another children's book here. In fact, all my books today are from children's books. And I suppose that's because children's books rely on illustration, you know, the art world, to tell the story and to teach, like this one does here. This one is Harvesting Dreams, 100 Vasa for Kids. Now, I know that in New Zealand we have this association with 100 Vasa and the toilets at Kawakawa.
Or the flag, or the wonderful flag.
The flag, design. But I only discovered the flag recently, so that's why I'm talking, you know, my children actually said to me, you know, yes, Mum, you've taken us to those toilets several times, and I said, but that's just so cool. So, as is this book, there's a lot going on in this book, as you would expect from 100 Vasa, filled with... facts about it. It's not a New Zealand book. It's been published in Germany. Obviously, this is the English language version. He was just such an interesting guy. Austrian, a thinker, and a doer. He was also an architect. An ecologist, hence the attraction to living in New Zealand in his later life, and the artist that we know. So fitting that this book for children has combined all of those. It's a biography. It's also a self-help book and art history all in one. So I'm going to read a bit from page 13, talking about a mind of his own. So you probably already heard the expression, he has a mind of his own. What does it mean? Whose mind would we have if not our own? Just imagine. And so then we talk a bit about 100 Vasa, or sorry, I can't pronounce his first name in German. But anyway, he was a free spirit, a lateral thinker, and someone who challenged people. He wanted people to feel for themselves and to discover what they really wanted and to express it. And then the book says, maybe you were thinking now, but what is so bad about that? Isn't that a good question? Do you like that? Oh, I've got one more bit for you. This is a quote from Hundertwasser. Our true illiteracy is our inability to act creatively. There we go.
Well, that is a beautiful quote, and it's actually, it's almost like you guessed what I was going to pick up next, even though I know I hadn't told you. So I've brought for my first actual artist book, a book by an artist, I've brought Julian Dashber's collections of writings, an Auckland artist, and a free spirit, and a thinking person, and a highly original thinking person. So the book is called, it's a collected writings that was put out, collected after his death, terribly untimely death at the age of only 49, and I still can't really believe it because he was just so alive, and is still, if you open this book and read it, it's just a plunge into the spirit of Julian. It's not about reading something written by a writer. It is actually written by an artist, and he's putting you there in his art. And it's original take on everything. So he was often called a conceptual artist. He would say, I'm not a conceptual artist. I think conceptually. I am an artist with a capital A. And in fact, the book, which is called This Is Not Writing, is a take on his exhibition that was called This Is Not Installation Art. This Is Not Minimal Art. So he just goes through life, and you know, everything is a fountain for some thought process and some original way of looking at things. There's a wonderful piece in the book where he's having a conversation with a jet pilot, and the jet pilot says, long-haul flights are described as 90% sheer boredom and 10% sheer terror. And Julian responds, it sounds like being an artist, only the other way around. So that would be 90% sheer terror.
He had 10%. A sense of humor.
He had a wonderful sense of humor. So he describes many of the works are either written up or talked about in conversation with someone. And there's a wonderful description. So two of my two favorite works are Leaving Nebraska, which was this wonderful artwork that he did in America. So Julian used to do sound recordings. He produced records. It's so odd reading the book because you see records, and I wasn't thinking of vinyl records, and I was going, records? What? Because it's been so long. But anyway, he produced records of sound recordings that were artworks. And so the Leaving Nebraska was one where he was in America, and he was leaving for the airport, and he had a student he wanted to finish talking with, so he got her to take him to the airport, and they would chat, they would finish the chat on the way out to the airport, and so then he decided he'd make a record of it. So he says, the next day she picked me up very early, and we said nothing all the way to the airport. I turned on the recorder, and we just drove to the airport saying absolutely nothing at all the way. It was kind of beautiful. It marked time, so to speak. We both knew what was happening without having to say anything. Apart from the fact that we ran over a squirrel before we had gone a block, the recording was essentially just about passing time. The time that I recorded signified many things for me, I guess. Leaving America, coming back to my family in New Zealand, making an artwork, leaving a footprint, leaving Nebraska, and me thinking about all of this when I think about the record. And so that's cool. Leaving Nebraska. And then the other artwork that I really love.
But I'm picturing this poor squashed squirrel.
Oh, wrong.
I did not expect that in the middle of that.
It's art. Mm. And the other
Expect the unexpected.
The other is Future Call, which I absolutely love. So Future Call is a phone call made from New Zealand to a tiny town in the mountains above Trieste in Italy, which was, the instructions were to the people in Trieste, don't answer the phone. And so the call would come from New Zealand from the future and then would just ring on this empty line, because also Julian didn't want them to pick up the phone on the other side.
And change history.
He didn't want to have to pay the connection fee.
Oh, okay.
But also, yeah, it could change history.
I'm reading too much into this.
So, and then the other thing about this book that's so wonderful is when you get to the end of it, there's the book list that he created for us for the website, for the Auckland City Library's website, as it was at the time, where we had a celebrity pick section. We had celebrity book lists, and he wrote us 10 books, including... including 10 fantastic books. I think you're just going to have to get the book and read them yourself. But one of them I am going to talk about later.
All right.
And,
okay.
Yeah. And I just wanted, so
I was just about to ask the question, you know, is there a book we know?
Well, Strangeland is on it also. And I don't think there's, I'm not sure if there's a book you know, Lisa, but unfortunately we don't have time to go through all 10 of them.
No,
yeah. But I just wanted to say one more thing about Julian, because Julian was really an international artist. Like, he really took New Zealand out to the world and the world into New Zealand. And there's this wonderful piece in the book where he says, it's about New Zealand. I just really love this. He says, the modernism that came into New Zealand had to come a long way to get here. It is only natural, given the way it was packaged, that it got damaged along the way. It is an irony of our time now that New Zealand's Pacific distance is an advantage to us. That very distance, whose obstacle shaped our past, will continue to affect us by placing us in a fresh context. Distance is no longer an excuse, but has instead become an introduction.
Wow, yeah. I really like that.
Yeah,
and that's so true. When do you think? When was that written?
That particular thing was written, what does it say? Published in the catalog accompanying the touring exhibition Cultural Safety 1995.
Wow.
Yeah.
A forward thinker.
So
indeed.
Over to you.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, you know, out of the world of children, though about to go back into it, Pablo Picasso seems to be having a moment. There's a brand new book in the library, Picasso, An Intimate Portrait, written by his grandson. And it's really quite frank. And he's got these chapters, Picasso and Woman, Picasso and Politics, Picasso and Money, Picasso and Death. If you're into Picasso, I mean, we know so much about him, but there's still more to learn about Picasso.
Always.
He's fascinating, isn't he? And also National Geographic has a TV series on him at the moment as well, was starring Antonio Banderas as Picasso. I really can't picture Antonio as Pablo because, you know, he's so tall, but looking forward to seeing that as well. So
maybe he stands on his knees in the show. As well as shaving his hair.
Oh, it doesn't, you know, his Spanish accent obviously works well in it, I guess. But this book led me to reminded me of one of the most powerful books about an artwork that I think you will ever find. It's called, and here it is here, this is the one I was trying to position earlier.
Oh, right. I saw the sepia photograph. Yeah,
it's such a beauty. It's called And Picasso Painted Guernica. Now, it is a children's book, but it's so much more than a children's book, I think.
Yeah, I see that book as really a book for the whole family. It's a book you can look at with children, possibly not three-year-olds, but I think from like age eight on, you could be seven or eight on.
Yeah, I mean, with your family. It's for everyone. So, like the Hundertwasser book, there's a lot going on. It's a biography about his early life, and I'm going to read you a bit from that part, because I really love the way it's been translated from Spanish, so it retains that essence of a romantic language in it. So this is about Picasso's birth, his birth year. So we get a bit of a history lesson. Paris, October 1881, in front of a crowd of thousands, Thomas Edison demonstrates his new invention, an electric light. Little by little, night will get brighter on Earth. Didn't expect that, did you?
No.
So meanwhile, in Spain, it's the end of summer. The sun is less fierce and the oranges in the Andalusia are ripe at last, plump and sweet. On October 25th, between the sea and the olive-treed hills of Malaga, a child has born. His parents call him Pablo. So, and on this page is a painting that he was obviously talented from day one. Well, his father was also a painter, where he's painted a girl. He was the age of 13, and it is an amazing, detailed painting. I've never seen it before, except in this book, you know, amongst all the galleries. So then the book carries on talking about his early art years, and then we move into the Spanish Civil War, again unexpected. in a children's book about a painter, and the atrocities in the town of Guernica. I don't know, do you know the story?
Yeah, Karen? Well, I've actually seen the painting. You have too, haven't you? Did you see it?
Yes, I've seen it.
I saw it at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and I was at a very impressionable age. I was 14, I remember really clearly. And it is, Spanish Civil War was a huge rite of passage for me in terms of forming my worldview. So, yeah, I mean, the thing about Guernica, it was one of the first times that bombing was deliberately done on a civilian population.
Yes.
Of course, that's so timely now. We live with that all the time.
But yeah, sadly.
At the time, it was a real shock to people.
It was a real shock, and it was also one of the first sort of war atrocities that was able to be... The media were present, and the very next day or a few days afterwards, Picasso was in his cafe in Paris reading about it in the newspaper, and there were the photos of the it was a destroyed town, so the back story is that Franco, the dictator, trying to take over the Spanish government from he was a nationalist and
yeah.
the Republican, somehow got Mussolini and Hitler to
somehow they were all fascists.
Yes, they were all fascists. Yeah, they were all in it together. And anyway, so they chose the town of Guernica to just destroy.
Yeah.
A Basque town in northern Spain. So, so these images stayed with Picasso. He had already been asked to present something in an exhibition in Paris, and Guernica, the painting, is one of his most famous paintings, was it. It's moving in the book. We see the plates of his sketches as he formed the painting and depicting the horrors of this atrocity. And it's a very moving painting, and in the book it's actually got a full spread of the painting in there, so that is a beautiful and moving piece of artwork that depicted in a children's book, isn't it?
Yeah, and it, well, as we said, I think it's a book for the whole family.
The painting actually hangs in Spain now, but
Karen, and the book is here in the library.
And,
and it's called Guernica. Exactly.
Picasso painted Guernica.
So I'm going to cut in and go into my next book because time is moving on, as much as we'd like to continue talking about the Spanish Civil War.
I know, you've got a couple more to get there.
Oh, and we've and I have a treasure
in the basement.
So
right.
For my next book, coyly interrupted my discussion of Julian Dashbrough's book list. One of them was because I brought in a book by Tracy Emin, the artist, the British artist, and he had on his book list was her wonderful sort of coming-of-age artist book of it's called Strange Land. So Strange Land meaning her space. She's of Turkish origin, and she does go back to Turkey in the book, and she deals with that. She's actually growing up in Margate, which she calls the knuckle of Britain. I was thinking I was sort of talking like someone from Margate. what she calls the knuckle of Britain, which she calls the knuckle of Britain, where she grew up and where she was raped when she was 13, which is Ooh. Something which had a, as you can imagine, a decisive effect on her worldview and also on her amazing art. She's the one who's famous for having made as an artwork an embroidered tent with the names of all the people she slept with, and she also exhibited her bed at the Tate Gallery. And so anyway, in this, a reason for which I've decided that Julian Barnes is completely off my list, because I read the other day for the first time something that Julian Barnes had to say about Tracy Emin's bed, and I've decided Julian is off. So I just wanted to tell you funny part.
No more shows mentioning Julian Barnes.
Yeah, no more mentioning Julian Barnes. So what Julian Barnes said basically was that he was talking about judging an amateur poetry contest and how a woman that he was talking to had done it. And she said, it was like people were cutting off pieces of their legs or their arms and sending them into me. And it was just a really harrowing experience. And he said, actually, come to think of it, maybe he was onto something. He said, like, Tracy Emin's bed. And I was thinking he meant in the sense of, like, an amateur poetry contest, but maybe he meant she was cutting off a piece of... No, I think I'm going to reinstate Julian.
Okay.
He probably meant, like, she actually was giving you a piece of herself, tearing off her leg to give to you. So in this
part of the book. So I could, Strange Land is missing from Central City Library. Whoever's got it, please bring it back. But we do have other copies, but I couldn't get my hands on one right away. So I did get my hands on a book that she, another book of hers, which is My Life in a Column, which collects the columns she used to write for, was it The Observer? I think it was The Independent, excuse me, The Independent. Anyway, so here's an example of Tracy Emin. So she wakes up one morning and finds a bird on her bed and her cat about to attack and kill the bird. So on her bed, her famous bed, so she jumps up with the speed of light and grabs the cat and the bird tries to get away, and the cat jumps back on the bird, and finally the cat manages playing, she gets the cat and locks him in the bathroom, and the bird gets away, and then she's thinking about it. The bird plays dead, so in a moment of terror, and then the bird flies off, and she says, in life we are sometimes asked questions that we really can't answer. It's a waiting game, knowing that time sorts stuff out. But sometimes there's a breathless moment when you feel if you don't act, if you don't make a decision, everything will be too late. It's one of those now, now, now things. Personally, I should take a note from my little friend the bird. I don't have to run around like a lunatic, complicating my life, feeling confused and indecisive. Maybe if I just rest back and close my eyes, someone will come along, pick me up gently, and chuck me out the window. But it's cool when one is confused. Life is not all straight. We never know what's coming to get us. As Lord Byron said, I'm standing on the edge of a precipice, and it's the most wonderful view.
Thank you. So, how do you pronounce my name again?
Tracy Emin.
Tracy Emin.
Yeah. Right. Well, I don't know. It's Turkish. Maybe it was Tracy Emin at one time. They say the Emir Pasha, but I believe that in the Western world we say Tracy Emin.
Thank you.
So we've got, let me see, I'm just thinking, do we have time for my treasure from the basement? So we've got...
Because you've got this...
We've got two minutes. It's a monster book. So it's Andy Warhol's diaries. So I won't go into a long description of them. Andy Warhol used to dictate these diaries, so you don't think of Andy Warhol coming back to his room every night. He would phone up one of his assistants every morning and speak over the phone, and she typed them all up in the days of typing, and she turned them into these diaries, and they're just absolutely, is this book is, how would you call that, about, is that 10 centimeters thick?
Seven?
Anyway.
It really does look like it depicts a full and exciting life.
It does, and I was pleased to see a character named Dr. Karen, who's the one who goes around giving collagen shots to all the aging males. I think he's supposed to do something for their skin. So there's a really great... when you say, full life, so one of the things she asked herself in the introduction, she tries to make a list of the things that were really impressed Andy that he wrote about in the diary, and it's a really good summary. So fame, beauty, talent, outrageous nerve, and good talkers, and money. So this book is, you just bring it home and you put it on your bedside table, you put it on your coffee table, and every once in a while you just leaf through it, and it's got just wonderful pieces. So the one I love, and I'm just going to read this because we've got a minute, is the one about the astronaut. So he says, this is April 15th, 1981. Had a sleepless night, watched the astronauts coming back on the shuttle on the Today Show. They're really cute. Oh, I can't do Andy. I should be doing Andy Warhol's effectless voice.
Kind of hollow
and nasal. I don't know how to do it. I can't be effectless. Did you ever notice how old they look after the space flights? They send up these good-looking guys, and they get back these tired-looking people. They had some food in another room, but they didn't offer me any. The execs were coming in, eating cheese, and saying things like, this is a good spread, things that sound just like the commercials. And people really do talk that way. They really are like ad people. I think Andy Warhol was a genius. And he was also Slovakian, and so that ties into my Slavic blood.
Oh.
So that's the name, Warhola.
Yeah.
As we said about Donald Warhola in the book that we will bring back another time.
Wow, I think we've run out of time for anything
You've
else
got,
today.
You've got 50 seconds for your...
I was going to mention Gordon Walters, so talking about artists having moments. Gordon Walters, New Zealand graphic, known for his Koro design art, is having an exhibition of his work at the Auckland City Gallery at the moment, and also there's a new book to go with it. But I found a lovely book with a piece of his artwork on the cover, contemporary Māori writing. So what we'll do is bring that out another time to discuss it. But we shall leave it there. I hope everyone enjoyed our show today about art, artists and books, the intersection of the artistic world, I guess.
And I just want to say, for the Theatre of the Mind, that Luisa is wearing a sweater with a heart on it that looks just like I Heart New York, and I am wearing a little black dress. So,
in her art mode.
In our art mode. So, we'll... Ka kite anō.
Yes, we'll see you next week. Ka kite anō.
This program was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day.